The U.S. government has shut down for the first time in 17 years after last-minute moves in the House and Senate failed to break a bitter standoff over President Obama's health care law. Members of Congress were unable to agree on a new budget and refused to extend the current one. And without the authority to spend money, the executive branch started temporarily closing facilities and suspending many government services. An estimated 800,000 federal workers face furloughs. Critical functions like air traffic control and military operations will continue. Social Security benefits will be paid, but national parks and most federal offices will close. Meanwhile, earlier this morning, the Senate voted 54-46 in a straight party-line vote to table a measure favored by Speaker John Boehner and the House Republicans to negotiate further over curtailing elements of the Affordable Care Act as a condition of keeping the government financed. Joining us now to discuss the congressional impasse is Emily Wanless. She's Assistant Professor of Government and International Affairs Political Science at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. Emily, thanks so much for joining the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, is the Affordable Care Act, is that what's really at the heart of this dispute that's led to the government shutdown?
I think on paper that's what the dispute appears to be, but I think it's also speaking to a larger issue with the Tea Party's presence within Congress.
And are we seeing that there's House Republicans are split with the more moderate members and then the Tea Party members?
Correct. So what we're finding when we look at the behavior of both the leadership in the House and amongst the rank and file, we're seeing that the House Republicans are becoming more polarized, yet not more partisan. So the distinction there is polarized means opposite from your opposing party. So Republicans as a whole are becoming more distinct from the positions of Democrats. But they're not becoming more partisan, meaning that they're willing to vote along what's in the best interest of their party. And so you see votes being taken or positions being taken that are good for individual members of Congress in the Republican Party, mainly the Tea Partiers, but aren't necessarily good for the party as a whole.
So these terms, polarized and partisan, are important to keep in mind and to remember the differences?
I'm sorry?
Well, you mentioned polarized and partisan. These terms, or these the differences, are those important for us to keep in mind as we understand what's happening?
Certainly. I think if you look at the votes that have been going on over the past 2 days, we're seeing motions being tabled in the Senate before they're even discussed. The distinction really between polarized and partisan is not just a simple disagreement between opposing ideologies, but an opposition and a sense of disgust or hatred that goes along with it. And so things like compromise, which are needed in order to pass the budget or the continuing resolution, are becoming harder and harder to come by because of this increased hostility within members of Congress.
This hostility, does that make it impossible for Congress to work effectively?
It's been an increasing trend, and as we look at the production of Congress, it has slowed over the years. And so I think it's a growing concern amongst those who follow Congress and the policy outputs of it.
What is the role of John Boehner in trying to deal with the different elements, the different factions in the Republican Party in Congress?
Well, I think the clearest kind of comparison we can make is to Newt Gingrich, who was the Speaker in the 1995-96 shutdown that occurred. And these two men are fundamentally different, both in their leadership styles as well as their appeared effectiveness with the members of their caucus. So Newt Gingrich held a lot of power within the Republican Party at the time and had a lot of tools at his disposal to kind of carrot or stick members into voting in accordance. John Boehner does not have such a luxury, not because he's less regarded by members of his party, but the Tea Partiers' stances oftentimes are more ideological and less willing to bend for a party over, let's say, their firm preferences or beliefs.
Is Speaker Boehner then, in his dealings in this situation with the government shutdown, a part of his motivation concerned with keeping his speakership?
I think that's definitely an issue. His last vote to retain the speakership, there were grumblings that there may be opposition coming forward. However, none surfaced, and he was reelected to the position. But this is certainly a fine line that he's walking, and should it not go his way, I think that he does need to be kind of looking over one shoulder.
And what is the role of Eric Cantor? I don't seem to be reading that much about him in regard to the House negotiations that have led to the government shutdown.
Right. So the majority leader here is going to be concerned more with keeping the party in line, and so he does a lot of that behind the scenes, whereas Speaker Boehner is kind of the face of not only the Republican Party that's in the majority, but also the face of the House of Representatives. So you're going to see a lot more pressure put on Boehner than you will Eric Cantor.
And we talk about the House. Now what is happening in the Senate with the Senate Republicans?
They're, to be honest, dealing with some of the same forces, especially with the presence of the Tea Party, as the members of the House are. It's a little bit easier for them because they are in the minority. And so if they defect, that just means that they may lose their position by a larger margin. But they're ultimately going to lose if it is going to come down to a party vote. In the House, if you start seeing defections from the Republican side, they only have about 17 members that they can work with and overcome if it is still a party line vote in the House.
What's interesting in seeing how this is shaking out, how the debates are going, it almost seems like the House is trying to retroactively veto a law, the Affordable Care Act, by refusing to fund the rest of the government. Is that kind of what their motivation might be?
I think that it's clear that the House Republicans and Republicans in general are not pleased with the outcome of the health care bill passing, being signed into legislation, and also being supported with the Supreme Court's decision to uphold the law. That being said, I think a growing trend among public opinion is that the health care bill is becoming less popular. And what's interesting is that it's becoming less popular amongst those that are learning about the bill. So I think that the House Republicans can have some sort of a leg to stand on when they say that they are doing what the American people have voted them in to do, which is to stand against the Affordable Care Act. Is it seen as obstructionist? I think by a large majority, yes. And I think a large majority, while not in favor of the health care bill, or piece of legislation, excuse me, are also not in favor of using this as a bargaining tactic.
Yeah, how unusual, looking in the past, maybe previous government shutdowns, that something like this, like the Affordable Care Act, already enacted piece of legislation, a bill, is being used as a bargaining chip in funding the government.
It actually isn't all that surprising. If you look to most government shutdowns, a specific program or an area of legislation is the driving force for most of these budget negotiations. I think that cooperation and kind of working together to come up with a compromise or solution, at least at this point, seems a little bit harder to come by than in the past. But the fact that we're taking some sort of medical or social program and using that at the heart of the debate isn't all that uncommon.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're discussing the current congressional impasse and the government shutdown with Emily Wanless. She's Assistant Professor of Government and International Affairs and Political Science at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. Looking at what's happening in the House with the congressman, do you think that they'll start feeling some pressure from constituents and districts that are especially hurt by the shutdown?
I certainly think so. I think as we saw the growing unpopularity of the government shutdown as an option, I think you're going to start seeing members of Congress voting more in line with the preferences of their district. It is interesting to hear the Republican Party is already starting to not necessarily collapse or cave, but there's a growing concern. You can just tell through quotes that they're worried that defections are going to start coming.
Well, going back to the 95-96 shutdown, the Gingrich-Clinton, the conventional wisdom over the years has been that that shutdown weakened the Republican Party. Do you see that at least the younger lawmakers agree with that and perhaps are willing to maybe make some compromises or see that shutdown might not be the way to go here?
I think that if they look to history, you do see that the Republicans largely took the blame for the shutdown. What I think is a little bit different is, one, we had divided government in Congress, and so in 95, both chambers were controlled by the Republicans, so it was very easy to place blame either on Congress or the president. Even with that being said, immediately after, in the 96 elections, we actually, while seeing Clinton reelected, did not see very many House members or senators lose their seats. I think in the House, only three Republicans failed to get reelected, and in the Senate, they actually picked up two seats after the whole budget ordeal. So I don't think it's as cut and dry as it may appear to be. That being said, we're never really quite sure who's going to take the hit for this. Right now, it's actually pretty spread amongst President Obama and congressional Republicans, with an increasing amount of people placing blame on the Democrats.
How big a problem is the whole issue of a government shutdown, especially since there's so many parts of the government that are still in operation? Unemployment, Medicaid benefits still being paid, military is still being paid. Is this something that maybe tends to be overstated?
I think to an extent, we look at the services that are actually being affected by this, it may not come as doom and gloom as it appears on face value. I think what it damages more is the reputation of the United States, both within its own country as well as around the globe. So I think it says something if we are, you know, shutting down our government, and that will have an impact, obviously, on the economy, amongst other things.
Now, as we've mentioned, it's been 17 years since that last government shutdown. Did that leave really a bad taste in a lot of mouths of people in Congress, at least as they look back? Because there was that whole era from, 76, for a number of years that there were shutdown after shutdown, and now it's been 17 years since we've had the last one.
That's correct. And in fact, the last time we had a balanced budget was directly after the shutdown. You actually saw quite a bit of productivity, at least budget-wise, coming out of Congress. And then it slowly kind of eroded back to the status quo of constant fighting. As you recall, we've had budget shutdown threats for the past several years. And I don't think a budget has been passed without a continuing resolution since about 2009. So it's certainly an issue that seems to be kind of becoming more of a commonplace.
Well, we're talking about the government shutdown, but also coming up later this month, Congress needs to resolve the dispute over the debt limit.
Yes. So we're going to get through this, and then right on top of it is going to be the debt ceiling, which is rumored to be a much more contentious, if you can believe that, debate in Congress.
So, what impact do you think the current debate will have on the debt limit debate?
Well, I think that what we're seeing now is how willing is President Obama and the Democrats to stand by their convictions. So they came out and said, we refuse to deal with any continuing resolution that's not considered clean or without this Affordable Care Act provisions included. And then we have on the other side Republicans who refuse to relent on their claims that this should be defunded in order to pay for. I think so. It speaks to each side's willingness to compromise. And I think what you can take from the budget continuing resolution debate is whoever relents here in this actual situation is going to be less likely to compromise when it comes to the debt ceiling. So you may see Republicans cave because on the continuing resolution issue, because they're looking forward to the debt ceiling debate.
Well, last night, Charles Krauthammer, political analyst, said that the Republicans would be wiser to give up on the Obamacare issue and fight hard against raising the debt ceiling. That seems to be your thoughts as well?
I would agree with that, yes. I think that if the Republicans are concerned about reelection, then they'll stick with issues that are popular amongst their base and what they are generally elected for. Fiscal responsibility is one of those things, and while Obamacare seems to be unpopular and in growing so, there are other ways in which to go about resolving that issue. I mean, at the end of the day, even if the continuing resolution is passed with these defunded Obamacare provisions, you're still going to see a majority of the Affordable Health Care Act being enacted regardless. So it's on principle a debate that the Republicans aren't willing to give up yet, but I think if they want to be successful in what gets them reelected year in and year out, which would be things like the economy and the debt ceiling, then they would be wise to focus on that in the future.
With the government shutdown we're dealing with now and the debt ceiling coming up later this month, it seems like Congress is just, again, stuck in this endless cycle of crisis after crisis in which nothing seems to be resolved except with temporary fixes. Again, this gets back to perhaps what you're saying earlier about the polarization in Congress or something else going on here.
No, I think definitely a result of this growing polarization. We've seen this trend really since about 2003 kind of explode in Congress, and even more so now in 2010 and then the election of the Tea Party faction. So not only do you have the traditional opposition between Republicans and Democrats, but you also have Republicans who are coming way from the right in the Tea Party and also taking on the Republicans, and at the same time Republicans are dealing with Democrats. So it's a definite issue for Congress.
As you mentioned, this has been going on for over 10 years. Do you see that this changing in the future, or do you think that we're stuck in this cycle for a while?
I think we're stuck in the cycle for a while, and you have to remember that the American people are continuing to vote in this divided government. So while it's unfortunate, and certainly there are repercussions as we're witnessing right now with the shutdown, the general point of view is that slow incremental change in this country is preferable to swift and decided action. So the fact that we have divided government so often provides for this kind of condition.
Any thoughts on how long this government shutdown could last?
Well, given the vote in the Senate today, tabling even the idea of a conference committee, I see it lasting a little bit longer. It's not going to be a one-day shutdown, I don't think.
Is there any chance that the Senate would pass a continuing resolution with the House proposals on delaying or defunding the health care law?
It doesn't appear that way. And so even if they get through the hurdle of the Senate, House Republicans then have to deal with the potential of a President Obama veto, which he has indicated he would be willing to do should this pass Congress. And then as much trouble as it was getting the bill passed originally, they would need a two-thirds majority in both chambers, which they're nowhere near having.
Well, Emily, before I let you go, I'm just wondering, with what's happening in Congress today, as a teacher at Augustana College, how does the, what are your students saying, and how does this illuminate what you're trying to instruct regarding how our government works?
They're certainly frustrated, as much as I think many Americans are. They have a general view about Congress about as positive as most other Americans, and so we try and look at why we see the behavior that we do, what's the motivations, how can we go about remedying such motivations, things like elections and influences in elections was a big topic of conversation, and how elections and influence governance once in office. And I think that they are becoming more and more aware that, that we're all kind of interconnected when it comes to the government, that the actions of the president influence the actions of Congress and vice versa.
Well, Emily, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us for Dakota Midday.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
That's Emily Wadless. She's Assistant Professor of Government and International Affairs, Political Science at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. And stay tuned for the latest on the government shutdown throughout the afternoon on Here and Now and All Things Considered. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke.